The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
On February 10, 2021, 4-year-old Oakley Carlson was seen for the last time in Grays Harbor County, Washington. She wasn't reported missing until 10 months later on December 6th when a school principal called in a welfare check. When police spoke to Oakley's biological parents, Andrew Carlson and Jordan Bowers, they gave conflicting stories and couldn't explain where she was. An investigation was immediately launched, and what followed was a series of disturbing events. Allegations of abuse, drug exposure, and medical neglect, all at the hands of Oakley's biological parents. And yet, despite multiple investigations and searches, Oakley has never been found. Now, more than 4 years later, the question remains, what happened to Oakley Carlson? Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. First and foremost, I want to apologize for the tardiness on this week's case. Without getting too much in the weeds again, I still am under the weather. It is what it is. We're dealing with it. I'm hoping I'm on the mend, but I needed some time to recover, and I'm still not 100% there, but this is a very important episode. For a lot of different reasons. One, it's an unsolved case. As always, that's important. But also, it's involving a missing child that's still out there somewhere, potentially. And for those of you that don't know, April is actually National Child Abuse Prevention Month. So it was really important for me to cover this case this month to make sure that everyone knows Oakley's name. And if there's anything you can do to contribute to the case, you have the opportunity to do so. I also wanted to mention that our team worked with Light the Way Missing Persons Advocacy Project to put this episode together, and there is a lot of information about this case, so we decided to focus on the facts of Oakley's disappearance and not focus too heavily on the foster family and what they've gone through, which has been absolutely horrific. But if you would like to learn more about that, you can go to Light the Way's website at lightthewaymissing.com. Now, I will say this, even though we stuck to just the facts, there's still a lot of information that I have to cover. So let's dive into this week's case. At some point in the 2010s, Andrew Carlson started dating a woman named Jordan Bowers. From the outside, they seemed like an unlikely match. Andrew was working as a police officer with the Aberdeen Police Department in Washington State, while Jordan had a long history of arrests and criminal charges. Both had children from previous relationships. Jordan had a son, and Andrew had a daughter. In 2015, they had a daughter together. Then, on December 6, 2016, they welcomed another daughter, Oakley Lynn. Now, I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of names here that I could mention as far as the children. I've purposely chosen not to because those names have never been released publicly. So the only child's name that I will be mentioning is Oakley's. Not long after Oakley was born, the relationship began to unravel. In February of 2017, Andrew's peace officer certification was revoked after he committed a Brady offense for making false and misleading statements. Around that same time, both he and Jordan began using drugs. By the summer of 2017, their home life had completely deteriorated. According to reports, the environment was unsafe and child welfare officials got involved. All of the children were removed from the home, including Oakley, who was just 7 months old. She was placed in foster care but continued seeing Jordan and Andrew through supervised visits. That July, Jamie Jo Hiles, a local high school teacher, received a message from a former student. The student had a connection to Oakley's family and asked if Jamie Jo and her husband Eric would consider fostering and most likely adopting Oakley. The Hiles had spent years trying to have children, so they said yes right away. On September 22nd, Oakley went to live with the Hiles, and she stayed with them until she was nearly 3 years old. During that time, Jamie Jo and Eric became her parents in every way that mattered. She called them Mama and Daddy and referred to Jordan and Andrew by their first names. Oakley loved to make people laugh, and she showed a level of empathy that was rare for someone so young. She adored dance parties, story time, and the Muppets. One of her favorite things to do was to end her jokes with Fozzie Bear's famous line, Waka Waka, and I know most of you know that out there, so don't pretend like you don't. By July of 2018, plans were underway for the Hiles to officially adopt Oakley. It seemed like the best thing for her. Jamie Jo and Eric raised Oakley since she was a baby, and they really were the only parents she had ever known. Meanwhile, her biological parents were still struggling, and it wasn't safe for her to be in their care. That same month, things took another turn for the worse. On July 30th, Andrew was booked for assault after attacking Jordan and was ordered to complete a domestic violence treatment program in lieu of a conviction. Their agreement was conditional. If he failed to complete the program, he would face charges. Despite the fact that there was now documented abuse in Andrew and Jordan's home, Oakley continued seeing them through supervised visits. But as time went on, it became clear that even supervised contact wasn't safe. On March 7th, 2019, Oakley returned from a two-hour visit with visible red marks and scratches on her cheeks. Her diaper also hadn't been changed, so Jamie Jo immediately reported what she saw to DCYF, which, for those of you who don't know, stands for the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And upon reporting it, surprisingly, her concerns were not taken seriously, and no cause for the red marks was ever determined as far as we can tell. Meanwhile, Andrew was not complying with his court-ordered treatment program for the assault on Jordan. In May, prosecutors asked the judge to find him guilty for failing to follow through, but the charges were ultimately dropped. To this day, no one outside of the courtroom knows why. And I'm not going to sit here and speculate too long. I've talked about domestic violence cases with you guys in the past. I can just tell you from firsthand experience, if you don't have a victim that's willing to cooperate and the couple is still together, it's really difficult to go forward, even if you have physical evidence to prove that the victim was assaulted. If they're the two still together and they're kind of joined at the hip and working together as a team, it really becomes counterproductive for the court. They have so many other cases that need to be heard and need to be vetted thoroughly that in many instances, they'll just say, you know what, F it, let's just drop it. And if I had to guess, that's more than likely what happened here. So after all that went down in July, Jamie Jo received a call from DCYF who told her that Oakley would most likely be returning to live with Andrew and Jordan. And Jamie Jo couldn't understand how that decision was being made. Nothing had changed. If anything, things at the home of Andrew and Jordan had only gotten worse, and just a year earlier, the Hiles had been told that they would be adopting Oakley. None of it made sense. And they didn't hear much from DCY after that until September, when they were told that the supervised visits with Andrew and Jordan would be increasing. On October 19th, Oakley spent time alone with her biological parents for the first time since she went to live with the Hiles. Now, as far as we know, that first visit was unremarkable. However, 1 week later, she had a second unsupervised visit with them. And when she came home to the Hiles, she told them that Jordan had actually hit Andrew in front of her. Now, fortunately, Jamie Joe recorded Oakley talking about what she witnessed, and I want to play that video for you now.
Look, I'm going to take his phone from me.
Oh, and so...
And he took his phone from you?
Yeah.
Did you have Andrew's phone?
Yeah. I was watching Coco Melon.
Okay.
And Andrew took it.
And then what happened?
And Jordan put him back in his bed.
And then Jordan put Andrew back in his bed?
Yeah.
Oh.
Did she hit him, Oakley?
Yeah. Him dead, really hard,
Jordan.
Or why did she hit him?
Because he was being mean.
Why was he being mean?
Now, first off, how cute is Oakley, right? She's adorable. And it's so heartbreaking to watch that video and know what's about to happen. Although we don't know the details, we know that something went wrong. And to think that anybody's capable of intentionally or unintentionally hurting a child, it baffles my mind even after 20 years of doing this. But now, putting my detective hat back on, you watch the video, I've watched the video, pretty self-explanatory. This is a young kid, and you could make the argument that maybe she was quote-unquote coached. I don't believe she was, but if I was Andrew and Jordan, that's obviously what I would say. But just taking the video at face value, it looks authentic to me, and it looks like a three-year-old or almost three-year-old girl is telling you exactly what she witnessed the best way that she can. So what do you think happened after this video was recorded? What would you have done? I think most of us probably would have done exactly what Jamie Joe did, which was email the social worker, Angela Fries. And she shared what Oakley had said along with the video, but Fries replied saying, quote, there were no concerns and that Oakley loved her mom and dad. Maybe she does. That really doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. There's been many instances where a child has loved their parents, but if their parents are scumbags and mistreats the child, we still step in as adults. That's what we're supposed to do. So the fact that Oakley potentially maybe loves her mom and dad, even though she doesn't call them mom and dad, that's a different story. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. And the fact that Angela Fries would bring this up as a potential defense, it's absurd to me. In the weeks that followed, Jamie Joe was informed by DCYF that overnight visits with Jordan and Andrew were about to begin. Understandably, Jamie Joe pushed back, saying that she was concerned, especially since Oakley had just witnessed a domestic violence incident between Jordan and Andrew, and she told them everything was moving way too fast. Fries responded by letting her know that Oakley would now be going back to live with her biological parents full-time, and her move-in date was set for November 29th. I don't want to go too far down the road here. It's not going to help us, and you know, I don't have all the details, but the way this read to me, it sounded a little retaliatory. I hope that's not the case, but it sounds like maybe Jamie Joe was, you know, being too inquisitive, and Fries was potentially bothered by the fact that she kept questioning what DCYF was doing. So in response, she said, hey, you want to keep arguing with me? You want to keep questioning what we're doing? I'll do you one better. I'm going to take Oakley from your home full time, and then I don't have to hear from you again. Now, I really hope that's not the case. And internally, I hope there's documentation to support that even before Jamie Joe inquired about all these new changes, the decision had already been made for Oakley to move back home on November 29th. If there's any documentation that shows that it wasn't until after Jamie Joe started asking questions that this quote-unquote decision was made, well, then we have a major problem. So, on the 29th, Oakley, who was only a few days away from turning three, was officially returned to her biological parents, who had moved to a 300-acre property in Oakville, Washington, a remote and isolated area in Grays Harbor County. Exactly the kind of place you wouldn't want two unfit parents raising children. And before I continue, I need to mention that Jordan and Andrew had brought another child into the world that year, a son. So now they had three children together, a newborn son, nearly three-year-old Oakley, who didn't even know Jordan and Andrew as her parents, but that's a different story, and then Oakley's older sister, who was four. Plus, as I mentioned earlier, Jordan and Andrew's children from previous relationships, so yes, this was definitely a full house. For the Hiles, having Oakley go back to living with Andrew and Jordan was devastating. Eric later told Never Seen Again, quote, "I could feel my heart breaking. We knew this would be the last time we saw her because we knew her parents wouldn't let her see us. They had no idea just how right they would be." We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
"5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Okay, we're back, and over the next 8 months, Jamie, Joe, and Eric tried to work through the grief of losing the child they had raised and were planning to adopt. They were heartbroken, and they were terrified. As far as they could tell, Oakley was in danger. And as you know from the teaser, they had every reason to feel that way. They continued monitoring the situation from afar and reported major concerns to DCYF whenever they came up. Now, one of those concerns came up in January of 2021, when Jamie Joe received a photo of Oakley, who was now 4 years old, with a black eye. The image had been sent to her by someone who had got it from Oakley's paternal grandmother. On January 26th, Jamie Joe contacted DCYF to report the black eye, and the following day, DCYF opened up a case and sent a caseworker to check on Oakley and her siblings. Now, as we sit here today, it's unclear what happened during that visit, as none of the DCYF records have been publicly released due to the fact that Oakley is a missing person. On February 10th, a family associate visited the home and saw Oakley. As far as we know, this is the last time anyone outside the immediate household ever saw her. Then on March 24th, DCYF randomly called Jamie Joe and asked if she had seen Oakley. She told them no, she was no longer in contact with the family, and DCYF didn't explain why they were asking that question, and by the end of March, the quote-unquote investigation into Oakley's black eye was closed, even though no one had seen her since February 10th. And again, this is a problem, but we have very limited information. We need access to the DCYF reports. That's what we really need. We need to know what was actually done to see what happened to Oakley, and if there was anything that was done after the fact to monitor the situation and ensure that not only Oakley, but the other children were not being abused. And without that being publicly released, we really don't know. In some way, maybe they did do a thorough job. Maybe they were there often. Maybe they were talking with Jordan and Andrew. Maybe they were following up with Oakley. But because we don't have access to that information, we don't know. And on the other hand, there's a real possibility that a caseworker was assigned to the investigation, drove by, asked a couple questions to Jordan and Andrew. They gave some bullshit excuse. Maybe the caseworker spoke with Oakley. Maybe they didn't. And then basically said, yeah, nothing to see here. Accident. She hit the corner of the table. And that's the end of it. And then without any further reports of abuse, by February 10th, the investigator working the case said, yeah, nothing to see here. Let's close it out and clear it from the files. I hope that's not what happened. And again, if we ever get access to these reports and we find that that's the case, some people need to be fired. Now, after the investigation being closed on February 10th, it's unclear what happened over the next 7 months. All we know is that Oakley was not seen alive during that time. Then, on November 6th at 4:54 p.m., Andrew called dispatch to report a fire at the family's home. He said that the fire had happened earlier that morning around 10 a.m. According to Andrew, Oakley used a cigarette lighter to set the couch on fire, and Andrew put the fire out himself. He told dispatchers that no emergency response was needed, and he only wanted to file a report for insurance purposes. Now, there's still very little known about this fire. It wasn't classified as arson, and while the initial cause was listed as a microwave, they later changed it to a couch. And according to court documents, the family continued living in the home even after the insurance agent advised them that it wasn't safe. Now, when Jamie Jo reported her concerns to DCYF, they were ignored. Okay, so let's talk about the fire. You can see the pictures on the screen right now. I'm looking at them as well. Seems like a pretty significant fire to me. You can see that where the couch was, that's where the primary fire started. But as you can tell from the soot and the debris going up the wall and going onto the roof, that this was a pretty big fire. And you can see how in shambles the entire house is. So this wasn't just a little small fire that caught the corner of the couch and Andrew was able to put it out. It looks like the flames got pretty high and there was clearly a lot of smoke from what you can see on the walls. And that's concerning for me. We're going to get into that into perspective, but I mean, you can look and see at the fan. The fan's basically melted. There appears to be soot in the bathroom as well. You can see the bathroom in one of the photos. And then there's also an overview photo of the living room. Again, you can see all the smoke and soot going up the walls. And that couch is basically gone. And the only other observation that I took from it, not only how messy the house was, but you can see here that the microwave appears to be intact. So whoever said it was a microwave at first, they were clearly not telling the truth. And I don't know how you would mistake a couch for a microwave. So clearly the story wasn't consistent. There were some discrepancies in what they had to say. And the fact that Andrew wouldn't have emergency responders come out to at least check the integrity of the building to make sure it was safe for him and his family, it's questionable. I also think it's interesting that he blamed the fire on Oakley. So we will revisit that in the perspective because there could be something to it. And the fire was serious enough that people started bringing supplies to help the family recover. On November 24th, Oakville Elementary School principal Jessica Swift went to the home to drop off items for the children, and she stayed for about 5 minutes and saw all of Jordan and Andrew's children, except for Oakley. A few days later, teachers came to Jessica with concerns. They felt like something unsafe was going on in the home and wanted more information. Jessica decided to set up a play date with Jordan and Andrew's oldest daughter, who is now 6 years old. And I want to note before I continue that Oakley was not attending this school. So the concerns weren't specifically around Oakley, but the school did know that Jordan and Andrew had other children that were not attending the school. So they were familiar with Oakley, although they weren't personally teaching her. On December 4th, the playdate took place at Jessica's home while Jordan, Andrew, and the rest of the kids, except Oakley, went to stay in a hotel. Now, during the visit at Jessica's, Oakley's sister was sitting on the couch and she mentioned that one of her siblings was always following her around. Jessica then took that opportunity to ask her, quote, "Does Oakley do that too?" And Oakley's sister looked at her dead in the face and said, quote, "There is no Oakley." Jessica proceeded to ask her what she meant by that. And at that point, Oakley's sister curled up into a ball in the corner of the couch and started shaking. Jessica sat beside her and gently told her it was okay. The next morning, the sister said Oakley had gone back to live with her foster family because, quote, she was so bad. Jessica didn't think that was accurate, so she immediately called the sheriff's department, who told her that Oakley was not in foster care. She then called Jordan and asked if Oakley's sister could stay another night, and Jordan agreed, and the next morning, on what was now December 6th, Jessica brought the girls to school. As soon as the school day began, she immediately called in a welfare check on Oakley, whose fifth birthday happened to be that same day. At around 10 a.m., officers arrived at the hotel to conduct a welfare check, and they found Jordan and Andrew with their two-year-old son, but no Oakley. When asked where Oakley was, Jordan said, quote, "Oakley is with her mom," which obviously wasn't true. Jordan, who was there, was technically, I guess, her mom, and Oakley clearly wasn't with her. The officer asked to confirm that she was indeed Oakley's mother, and Jordan admitted that she was. The officer then asked again where Oakley was, and Jordan immediately turned to Andrew and said, quote, "Oakley is at your mom and dad's." So, again, the officer looks at Andrew and says, "Hey, where's Oakley?" And he initially didn't respond to the question, and when he was asked again, he claimed that Oakley was with his father. So the officer says, "Okay, no problem. What's your father's phone number and address?" And Andrew said that he didn't have his dad's phone number, and he initially claimed he didn't know his address. And eventually he realizes that that lie's not going to work. So he reluctantly provides a phone number and address for his father. So another officer contacts Andrew's father, who says that he hasn't seen Oakley in almost a year and clearly didn't know where she was. But even with that being said, the officers decide to follow up by checking the address, and sure enough, Oakley wasn't there. So after all this transpires, the officers contact CPS to ask if Oakley is in foster care, and they confirm that she wasn't. She was supposed to be with Jordan and Andrew. So the officers then return to the hotel to question Jordan and Andrew separately. When they told Andrew that Oakley wasn't with his father, one officer noted that he didn't seem surprised or even interested. Now, on the other hand, Jordan reacted very differently. According to court documents, when she was told the same information, quote, her demeanor was one of anger, and she yelled, quote, "I'm not going to answer any of your questions," before storming off back into the hotel. At that point, the officers left the hotel, and they would learn later that just 10 minutes after they left, either Jordan or Andrew factory reset their cell phone. Now, the report doesn't make it clear which one of them actually did it, but I think we can all agree that doing this right after the police leave, it's not a good look. Based on Jordan's behavior at the hotel and the fact that she and Andrew were clearly lying about where Oakley was, the police decided to arrest Jordan for obstructing a police officer. At this time, she and Andrew had gone back to their fire-damaged home, so officers went there and took Jordan into custody. What she said to police once she was in handcuffs is still unknown to the public, as this is still an open investigation. I know you guys have heard that before. Doesn't make it any easier for me to say it, but that's the hand we've been dealt. Now, while Jordan was being booked, Andrew sat down for an interview with police, and all we know about that conversation is that he made statements, quote, to the effect of Oakley being dead or not coming back for a reunion. So that quote is taken from the police reports that we do have, and that's in the words of the officer writing the report. So again, their interpretation was that Oakley was either dead or not coming back. Based on those statements, he was taken into custody and charged with obstruction. He and Jordan were also held on suspicion of first-degree manslaughter, which gave police 72 hours to gather more evidence to press official charges. With Jordan and Andrew behind bars, their children were sent to live in foster care yet again, and their Oakville home was searched as well. While Oakley wasn't located at the home, the search did reveal several disturbing details. Detectives found clothing and toys for all the other children, except Oakley. There were also signs of possible violence, including blood spatter on the blinds near the front door, on the door itself, and a handprint on the wall in the downstairs hallway. But according to law enforcement, the small amount of blood that they did not belong to Oakley. Even though the blood wasn't Oakley's, there was still a lot of suspicious things going on, and detectives needed more information, so Oakley's six-year-old sister was interviewed by a forensic interviewer. At first, she said, quote, she did not have a sister. But later, she acknowledged, quote, Oakley was her sister, but she had not seen her in a long time. During the interview, she fell silent for a moment, and then she told the interviewer that her mother, Jordan, quote, told her not to talk about Oakley. She went on to state that Oakley had gone out to the woods and had been eaten by wolves. When asked directly if Oakley was hurt, she didn't respond and started to cry. Eric later told Never Seen Again that he believes the children were told Oakley was bad, and because of that, she was eaten by the big bad wolf. But there are no wolves in that area, and obviously the police did not believe this is what happened, so there was a lot more work to do. Oakley's older half-brother then sat down with law enforcement, and he said that he had seen his mother beat Oakley with a belt, and that she would sometimes put Oakley in the closet, possibly under the stairwell, and that he had been worried about her starving. Now, obviously, this is really difficult to hear, especially when you think about that video I played earlier of Oakley, and you look at that sweet, innocent girl, and to think it's possible that anyone would do any of these things to her. Just a monster. And when you think about the source, the older brother, right? He has no reason to fabricate the story. If anything, he has an incentive to lie for his parents. And yet he's telling you this horrific story, and I have no reason not to believe him. Couple that with the fact that you've already heard something similar to another sibling, and we're starting to find out what was going on here. So with all of this information, the search for Oakley ramped up with the sheriff's office, FBI, state police, and other agencies combing the 300-acre property. Unfortunately, they found no sign of Oakley. We're going to take our last break. We'll be right back.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
All right, we're back, and with no sign of Oakley on the property, detectives began considering other possible scenarios. They looked into the theory that Oakley may have been sold, trafficked, or hidden by a friend of the family. But again, no evidence supported any of those scenarios. But I am glad that law enforcement looked into him, because I've said it a million times, one of the biggest mistakes I see in these cases is a law enforcement agency getting tunnel vision on one specific theory when what really happened is right outside their peripheral vision. So I do like the fact that they explored these other theories, even though there might not be anything there. It's still a necessity, because if this ever does go to court, part of our job as a detective is not only to build the case of what we believed happened, but also show evidence, or at least the investigation, of ruling out other possible scenarios that could be brought up by the defense. We've seen other cases where it'll go to trial, the defense will bring up a potential scenario that's highly unlikely, but still possible. And because investigators didn't vet it, now that's what the defense is going to run with. And there are people out there that will believe it, including potential jury members. And all you need is one. So that's why it's important that investigators document that, hey, although this is what we think happened, we also went down these paths as well, and there was no evidence to support it. So while all this is going on, the searches, the investigations, the exploring of different scenarios, the foster parents caring for Oakley's six-year-old sister, this is the one who had been at Principal Jessica Swift's for the sleepover, they raised another concern. They asked law enforcement about a medication that the child had been prescribed, and investigators soon discovered that Jordan and Andrew had not given her the medication in over 15 months. So let me just reiterate what I just said. This older sister of Oakley's, the six-year-old, she was supposed to be on a medication that was very important to her health. And Jessica and Andrew had not given it to her in over a year. And make no mistake about it, this medication was critical to the child's health. And without it, she faced the risk of permanent physical impairment or even death. And yet her quote-unquote parents hadn't given her this potentially life-saving medication in over 15 months. It's unimaginable. It's unconscionable. I don't know how any reasonable person could do something like this. And speaking of Jordan and Andrew, on December 9th, the 72-hour hold for the suspicion of manslaughter was about to expire. So rather than rush the case, detectives decided to move forward with different charges based on the evidence that Jordan and Andrew withheld life-saving medication for their six-year-old daughter. They were both charged with second-degree abandonment of a dependent person, which allowed law enforcement more time to conduct a thorough investigation into Oakley's disappearance without the clock running out on the manslaughter hold. At this point, DCYF was also investigating Andrew and Jordan, and on December 10th, they collected hair follicle samples from Oakley's sister and brother, which tested positive for substantial amounts of methamphetamine, indicating that they had been exposed to the drug within the last 3 months. As a result, prosecutors added 2 counts of endangerment with a controlled substance to both Jordan and Andrew's cases. Now, they initially pleaded not guilty. However, Andrew later pleaded guilty to the 2 counts of endangerment with a controlled substance, and he was sentenced to a maximum of 1 year in prison. You know how I feel about the judicial system. It's there. We need it. It's a necessity. But man, sometimes it just gets it wrong. I know this isn't the most severe charge that he has, but to think that these young children are being exposed to meth and the max sentence is 1 year in prison doesn't seem right to me. Am I going over here? Pause the video. Pause the audio if you're listening. Sound off in the comments. Am I wrong? Am I right here? I'm trying to be objective. If you found out that these adults who are responsible for the well-being and care of these children was exposing them to meth, do you think a year is enough? Let me know down below. So that was Andrew, and then Jordan also eventually pleaded guilty to 2 counts of endangerment with a controlled substance, and as part of her plea deal, 1 count of abandonment was dropped, and she was sentenced to 20 months in prison, and this is probably due to the fact that she had a more extensive record, but still, 20 months. Better. I would like to see 3 years. I think that would be suitable, especially with their past criminal history. But obviously, these sentencings are not based on the other crimes that they're being investigated for, which I understand. But I'm talking about just this. The endangerment with crystal meth, which could kill their children if they ingest it. 20 months. And we know they're not going to serve that, more than likely. So let me know. Let me know if I'm wrong. And so while all this court stuff is going on, detectives are still continuing to investigate Oakley's disappearance. And by mid-December, the physical search of the 300-acre property had officially concluded without finding any trace of Oakley. So even though they didn't find Oakley, the investigation continued. And in May of 2022, Detective Sergeant Paul Logan told NW News that the investigation into Oakley's disappearance was still ongoing with the help from the FBI. And based on everything they knew, he said the assumption was that Oakley was deceased, and they were working to gather enough evidence to bring charges. Since that announcement, there have been few major updates in Oakley's case. As of this recording, Andrew has been released from prison, but Jordan remains in custody, now serving time in an unrelated case, because in August of 2023, she was sentenced to 43 months for identity theft and fraud. Her expected release date is July 2025. Our last update in this case is from December 2024, 3 years after Oakley was discovered missing. At that time, the Grays Harbor County Sheriff's Office reiterated that Oakley's case is still actively being investigated. But unfortunately, as I sit here right now, Oakley is still missing. And the people who truly loved her and raised her, Jamie, Joe, and Eric, along with their community, they're still searching for answers. All right, I'm going to dive into this perspective, and I want to elaborate on some of the things I said during the episode. I want to talk about a potential theory of what happened and where I think we can go from here, specifically if we're unable to find Oakley's body. So first off, I had touched on DCYF a little bit, and I stand by what I said. If we find down the road that the investigation was very light and not much was done to look to see if something was actually happening to Oakley or the other children in that household, and DCYF essentially just phoned it in, the person immediately responsible, the investigator working the case, should be fired, and so should their supervisor. They should be gone. No questions about it. If they could have prevented this by doing their job, they should be gone, period. And I will tell you, and I don't want to paint any organization with a broad brush because I see it done with law enforcement and I hate it, but in my own anecdotal experiences, I haven't had the best experiences with DCYF. The few people that I dealt with, they always seemed like I was bothering them. that they really didn't need to be there. Like, it was probably excessive for me to call them out. And, you know, that was, I always had a bad taste in my mouth. Now, I know there's good people that work in DCYF, and I know they're out there doing the right thing, but we need a higher level of accountability, and we need people to do their job and follow the leads and not just make assumptions based on their own experiences. I'll elaborate on that. Maybe in the past, they've gone to houses and it turns out that it's just two sets of parents who are making allegations against each other as like a retaliatory thing. I get that. But you have to investigate every case of child abuse as if it's true. Because even if you miss just one, this is what can happen. So just like with law enforcement, I say it all the time, we need to hold DCYF caseworkers to the highest level of accountability. You mess up once and it results in something like this, you're gone. I don't think there's criminal charges that can be filed, but you should be fired. You need to find another line of work. That's what I'll say about that. But again, I can't stress it enough for my caseworkers out there that are going to see this case and that work in social services. I appreciate what you do, and I know it's a hard job. But if you're one of the good ones, make sure that you're holding your colleagues accountable, because you know, and I know, that there are people in that organization who are not doing the right thing. And it's your responsibility to make sure that someone knows that, so that they're not put in charge of a case where there is a child being abused. And because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, that child could be hurt or killed. That's all I'm going to say about that. Let me dive into the case. So we have the black eye that happens January 21st, around that date. It's reported on the January 26th. So we know that Oakley's being abused. On top of that, you have the siblings reporting the same thing. She's not being fed. She's being held in a closet. She's being hit with a belt. Multiple pieces of evidence. I hate to say it, but I think it's pretty clear that Oakley was living in a nightmare. Then we have March 24th, when DCYF randomly calls Jamie Jo and asks if Oakley's with her. Clearly she's not, but this just tells us, without having access to the reports, that at that point, DCYF is unable to account for Oakley. That's a problem. My number one question, I think it'll be yours as well, after getting off that phone call, was DCYF able to find her? Is there some type of documentation that we do not have access to that shows DCYF was able to locate Oakley and physically put eyes on her? That's important here. Not just word of mouth from Jordan or Andrew. Did this caseworker who called Jamie Jo track down Oakley and physically make contact with her so that when they wrote the report, they could say, yes, I found the child. She's okay. We need that information. We need to know that, because that'll narrow the timeline of whatever happened to Oakley. But without that, we go to November 6th, and that's when the fire occurred. And I found it very interesting that Andrew elected to blame the fire on Oakley. Why would he do that? If she hasn't been there for months, why would you run the risk of blaming it on a child that law enforcement or the fire department could eventually want to speak with, and you're not going to be able to produce her if she's no longer there, which is going to raise questions? So why would you do that? So there's a part of me, a small part of me, that believes maybe Oakley was still around at that time. Maybe she was still there, and maybe whatever happened to her happened that day. And the reason I bring that up is because we talk about the fact that she was held captive, essentially, underneath her staircase. She was locked in under the staircase for extended periods of time. Did the smoke in that house become so overwhelming that Andrew and Jordan and the rest of the kids had to run out of the house for a period of time, and the house filled up with smoke, and maybe they forgot Oakley inside? Is that possible? Is it possible that when all this was going on, they escaped the house and then realized after the fact that Oakley's still under the stairwell and she's breathing in all the smoke? Now, a small girl like this, if she's trapped under the stairs with all that soot and smoke that you can see up that wall, which I described earlier for a reason, if the fire was that big and there was that much smoke that it was melting the fan, is it possible that due to smoke inhalation, that's how Oakley died? Is that what happened here? And because of it, Andrew felt the need to throw that little nugget in there in case something was discovered, so he could say, yeah, she caused the fire. That's why this happened. It's a long shot. I don't know if that's the case. But when we talk about her being missing for a quote-unquote long time, according to the siblings, that long time statement is relative to the child. For them, a long time may be a couple weeks, maybe a month. Doesn't have to be 7 months. And without access to all the reports, we as a public don't know exactly when the last time we have a confirmed sighting of Oakley. From all reports, it's 7 months, but there may be something internally through DCYF or law enforcement that window is much smaller. And so this fire, again, it raises a lot of questions for me. When you think about the amount of damage inside that house, if a child had been left inside, intentionally, unintentionally, we don't know. Is it possible that she could have expired from her injuries? Absolutely. So again, I just keep coming back to it with Andrew's decision to make Oakley part of the narrative. Why would he do that? If she's already gone and you're not trying to draw attention, why would you say her name? I don't know. Weigh in down in the comments below. Let me know what you think. Do you think that scenario is possible? Is there an alternate version of that that you also think can be true? I don't know. I'm throwing it out there because I haven't heard it mentioned anywhere else. And I'm just wondering if there's a correlation between what happened to Oakley, the fire, and Andrew's decision to mention her as the reason for the fire. Maybe it's a nothing burger. Maybe it tells us the whole story. Hopefully we get that answer soon. So with all that being said, where does it leave us now? At this moment, we do not know where Oakley is, and there's many people that believe she is no longer with us. But there's a real possibility that we'll never find her. What if that happens? Do Andrew and Jordan just get to walk free from this? I personally believe they're responsible for what happened to Oakley. They were her parents. Of course they are. Whether it was intentional or unintentional, they're responsible for that child. So do they just get to go the rest of their lives without being held accountable for their actions? I don't think so. We have to do something. So I don't know how long it would take, but I think at some point, Oakley needs to be declared deceased. Once you do that, then you can potentially charge them with manslaughter or even murder. And then you build a case based on what we have, what I've talked about tonight, and everything that I don't know that's behind closed doors right now that law enforcement has learned and that DCYF has. You build the case, you tell the story like I did tonight, you put it in front of a jury of their peers and see what conclusion they come to. Best case scenario, they finally come forward and say, whoa, 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 we're not going down for manslaughter or murder. Oakley's alive. We gave her to so-and-so for this amount of money. She's still out there. Then you have new breadcrumbs that you can follow up on. So why wouldn't we squeeze them? Why wouldn't we force their hand by saying, hey, listen, here's what we think happened. You prove otherwise. And what's a defense team going to do? Turn around and say, Your Honor, my clients aren't responsible for the murder of their child. They actually sold her to a sex trafficking organization. She's still alive. Really? That ain't going to happen. So that's what I would say. You got to take the shot eventually. Build the case. Do your due diligence. Try to bring Oakley home. But if you can't do that, declare her dead. Create your case. Build it as strong as you can. Dot your I's, cross your T's, show that no other possible scenario is in play here. Exculpatory evidence, nothing that's going to rule it out, and go to trial with it. And let's see what happens. I personally believe they'll find them guilty of at minimum manslaughter. That's my belief, especially with the other siblings testifying against them. But at this point, we're kind of just in limbo. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know where this case is going to go. And we need answers. We need to find Oakley as soon as possible. And I'm really hoping that Jordan or Andrew slipped up and told someone something, and maybe one of you out there have the information to solve this case. So just to recap, Oakley Carlson was last verifiably seen on February 10th, 2021. And at that time, she was 4 years old. She stood 3 foot tall, weighed around 50 pounds, and had brown eyes and brown hair. Today, she would be 8 years old. If you have any information about Oakley's whereabouts, you're asked to contact the Grays Harbor Sheriff's Office at 360-964-1729 or Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-4700. 222-8477. There is currently a $100,000 reward for information leading to her discovery. If you don't have any information but still want to help, you can share Oakley's story and her flyer. You can also join the Facebook group Oakley Carlson, Oakville, Washington. And you can sign her petition at change.org/justiceforOakley. I really implore you to do that. And if you do, be sure to let them know that I sent you. I hope we have an update in this case soon, whether it's Andrew and Jordan being arrested and going to trial for this, or we find Oakley and bring her home. My final thoughts, as always, go out to the friends and family, specifically Jamie, Joe, and Eric. I'm thinking of you guys. It's absolutely tragic what happened. The system failed you, and you deserve to know what happened to Oakley, and I hope we have that answer soon. Until then, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you next week.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.